Mr. Feakin, Reel 2. I think the next thing is mobilisation of your unit. What do you remember of the mobilisation process?
I do remember we had already been mobilised on the day the war broke out, being a territorial regiment, and most of us were sleeping at the Lansdowne drill hall waiting for the move, which we knew was imminent. But on the actual day that war broke out, I was at my home, and my sister was sewing some bits and pieces on my back, of course. And I remember that 11 o'clock hour when Churchill said...
Chamberlain,
that's right, yes. Chamberlain said, "I have heard no such response so as from this time we are at war with Germany." I won't repeat what I said. I was enjoying myself much too much as a young soldier to think about going to battle.
Were you aware at all of the First World War? I know you didn't have much contact with your father, but any other relatives who'd perhaps been involved, were you aware of what the First World War had been like?
Yes, I think I was, because obviously I had uncles, and although I was very young when my father and mother split up, I was very fond of my father, and even at that age, I used to play soldiers, like all very small children do. And at a later date, with my mother and then my stepfather, so-called, we went to Germany.
When had that been? Do you know the date?
1920. Three, four, somewhere around.
So you'd still be quite a small boy.
Oh yes, I was still a small boy. And I was thrown into a German school for a very short while. I have an aptitude for languages, and I picked it up quite well, so I knew how much they thought of us and vice versa. But coming back to the Sunday morning, I said to my sister, "Well, that's it, make a good job of it." For selling, I'm referring to. We should be off. Tarsi, who I've mentioned before, rang me up. He said, "Don't you think it's time we went to the pub for a beer?" Which we did. And we reported the next morning, which was the Monday morning, to the drill hall, which was the 2nd of September. No, my apologies.
4th
of September. And we moved off on the 5th of September. And we thought, my God, this is it. Off to France. We, being an ordinary swatty, of course, we didn't know where we were going. We all marched through Bournemouth, the whole regiment, all flags flying, cheers, because we were a local TA unit. To Bournemouth Central Station. All on the train, parents crying, wailing, and what have you. On the train, we'd been on the train for about just over an hour. We pulled in at Salisbury Station. Quite a while there. We thought, this is a funny way to go to France. Train drew out again. Less than a half an hour later, orders came, it stopped. Orders came, disembark. That was Wilton, the home of the Pembrokes. Disembark, formed outside, marched into Wilton Square, divided into troops. Along came the sergeant, took my troop off to an empty, very large garage, and said, "This is your home from now on." And we slept on 3 planks and 2 trestles and straw palliasses. And that was it. 35 miles from home, and we were settled. Training started really in earnest then, and I decided I'd had enough of Sigma and I wanted to drive.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. I'm one of those very silly people that directly I get to really know and understand something, I get bored and I want to try something new. And I became a driver of the beer troop.
Now, had you already learnt to drive, or were you army trained?
Oh, yes. No, I had driven. I had a car at home. And
how did the army test you to see whether you were suitable as a driver?
Oh, very stringently. Very stringently. By this time, we had been issued with what was to be called a quad. And, of course, bearing in mind, you just don't drive the vehicle. You drive the vehicle with a gun crew and a gun and a limber on behind. So it's quite tricky. But I was determined to have a go. And thoroughly enjoyed, and won the battery trophy for driving.
How did they test it?
Well, behind in the very large fields at Wilton, that's where we did a lot of our training, with stakes planted in the field. And you had to whiz in and out these stakes with gun and limber. You never really backed or reversed with a gun and limber, because they would immediately lift the gun and limber off. You would reverse, they'd swing the gun around, hitch on again the way you'd go. But they put us through some very, very stringent driving, in and out of pegs and poles and what have you. And as I say, I was very chuffed when I became the battery number one driver.
What was the quad like to drive? Could you tell us a bit about it as a vehicle?
Pretty heavy. When one thinks back to 1939 and the size of Morris 8s and Ford 8s and what have you, suddenly look at this great big quad miles up in the air, the driver was, and you had your gun crew sitting behind you and the number one sitting beside you, and I thoroughly enjoyed that, because I was still a trained signaller, so if they were short and I wasn't driving, they would pull me in to do a job of signalling. And we thoroughly enjoyed it. We stayed at Wilton, I suppose, until April of the next year.
How did you get on with the local population?
Oh, very well. Very well. We've even been back there since the war. As a regiment.
I mean, did they make you welcome, you know?
Very, very welcome. I mean, we were all, 23, 24 years of age. And they were country people. And of course, we were the Tommies that were going out to fight for the country. And got an awful lot of beer for you. And that was good fun. And of course, we had a very dear old colonel.
Who was that colonel?
Colonel Pinney, country squire of Dorchester. We had a lot of real, all our officers were of that particular ilk. Their families still going strong. The Tories were well known in Dorset, and many other families like that. Quite a few of them. He paraded us one Saturday morning, I suppose around October of 1939, and said, those of you that have cars at home may on your next weekend bring them back so that you are able to drive home for a weekend leave and whatever. Which was rather fun because Colonel Pinney had a little tiny Austin. An Austin 7. One Tory had a Rolls Royce. He was a second lieutenant. There was a firm of auctioneers in Dorchester. I can't think of their name. He had a great big car. All the officers had very large cars, as did most of the other ranks. And the colonel had a little Austin 7. And everybody used to pin him in so that he couldn't get out. Wicked. But, as I said, it was most enjoyable. I remember being put on a charge, because I was on fire duty.
What was that?
252 is the expression. It's a charge sheet. Because I was fire picket, I'd asked another friend of mine or another chap to do it, and he'd forgotten to do it. So I was absent without leave. And I went to Bournemouth to the tea dance in the Bournemouth Pavilion, which I often did if I had weekend leave. I was very fond of dancing, as you mentioned. I was a host at the hotel. We had good fun. It was hard, very hard training, but we were able to relax when we were off duty and do as we wished.
Were you looking forward to getting into more active service, or were you happy as you were?
No, I wanted to get into active service. Mark you, I was still training and I wasn't ready to move, but it was in the back of my mind. And then, trying to think where we... Oh, I damaged my arm because I was doing some gun drill. And the MO downgraded me to B2.
How did you damage it? What was the accident?
Well, we were doing a movement which is called without drag ropes, prepare to advance, because you usually pulled a very large gun on two drag ropes if you had to move it manually. And this was a drill, whereas if you couldn't pull it out, you had to put one arm at the top of the wheel, one at the bottom, and rotate with the left arm forward and the right arm back, two of you each side. And the other's pulling and pushing, whichever way. And I damaged the right arm from trying to pull the wheel round. I was sent to Bovington Military Hospital. And when I became A1, no, sorry, I didn't become A1, I stayed as B2. They posted me to Woolwich. That's the Woolwich Garrison, of course, 17 training regiment. And from there, I was posted to an RAOC unit to Yorkshire.
Now, what happened to your unit? Your original unit?
Oh, the 94th. They still stayed at Wilton for quite a while.
Why were
they moved to Luton, which of course I wasn't with them, so I know very little about that.
Why weren't you posted back to them when you recovered?
They still downgraded me as B2.
And what were you doing with 17th Training Regiment? In Woolwich.
Just hanging about to be posted to whoever wanted a downgraded gunner, which we all felt very badly about. Right. Nothing we could do about it.
And then the RAOC in Yorkshire.
That's right. Bolton Abbey, that was it. Bolton Abbey, near Ilkley. And I used to do all odd. We slept in disused railway carriages, moving ammunition and what have you. I didn't do any of the lifting or anything because of my arm, so I was doing extraneous duties, helping the cook, polishing officers, Sam Browns, but nobody actually dared call me a batman. I think I should have strangled them. But I enjoyed that because it was in the heart of the country, and we used to catch fish in the stream and cook it. It was good fun.
And whenabouts was this? You'd left. When did you left the 94th, would you say?
I believe that was in 1940. I believe it to be in the summer of 1940. I can't remember the exact time.
And the summer still when you were at Bolton Abbey?
The summer was... Yes, the summer was still going on. Yes. Because of catching crawfish in the stream and sitting out in the sunshine and walking across to Bolton Abbey where they still held Sunday services, and I used to go and enjoy it. A beautiful pub called the Devonshire Arms, where a local taught me to tickle trout. It's good fun. From there, I put in for a medical, and I got back to A1 again, so I put in to go back to the 94th. And they were at that time in Buntingford, which was a tented camp. I wasn't there very long before they moved again.
Had things changed much when you joined, just before we move on?
Not really, no. Things didn't change in those days as quickly as they do now. And...
Are you pleased to be back?
Oh, very much. I got into trouble on one occasion because I'd cut out a picture of Hitler. And we had our pay books and IDs, and it was very late at night, and the guy shouted out, "Who goes there?" And I said, "Hitler." Got into trouble for playing that joke, and once Hitler be recognised, Feakin's nearly on a charge again. We moved from this place, Buntingford, to Maidstone, which meant, of course, that the whole regiment with guns, vehicles, travelling right through the heart of London. And it was absolutely marvellous. It's a long time ago. We had traffic lights and things like that. And police at every traffic light, halting all the other traffic. And we were dicing right through the heart of London. And I was in Bear Troop. ACT Troop had already gone in front of me, of course. And as we came to a tunnel, Keystone asked me which tunnel it was, because I didn't know London. There was a gun and limber on its own in a butcher shop. It was on a bend, and you go into this tunnel under the Thames. And this gun and limber had come away from the quad, travelled across the pavement into the butcher shop. But we couldn't stop, we just drove on. We came to Kent, we were going down a very steep hill, and I was trying to catch up with the gun in front of me. And I noticed the cars coming up the hill, moving over onto the grass verge. I said to the chappie beside me, "What's the matter?" So he got up and had a look. I won't use the words he said, but I was going too fast for my gun and limber, and they were swinging from one side of the road to the other behind me. So I had to slow down. And we pulled into a park just outside of Maidstone, where Jerry had got to hear that the regiment was on the move and bombed the park. That was my first realization that there was war on.
What do you remember of it?
Not a great deal. Nobody was hit, but the surrounding people were hurt. But nobody in the regiment was hit. We were in this woods, but obviously it was night, they couldn't see us. But we moved from there to a small village called Linton, just outside of Maidstone. And we stayed there for a while. And I think it was whilst I was there volunteers were called for. Now this may be hazy. To go overseas. And like many others within the regiment, much to the disgust of one Keith Joseph, was disgusted that I should take one pace forward. Because he and I were very friendly. He was the transport officer, Lieutenant Keith Joseph, later to become Lord Keith Joseph, was now deceased, and said I was a fool. Why don't I take commission again and go away on a better basis? And I said, no, I'll stay with my friend.
So your friend volunteered as well?
Yeah, the whole little batch of us.
Just before we leave, what was Keith Joseph like as an officer? He's quite a famous
man. Good. He was absolutely bloody mad on a motorbike.
In what way?
He used to drive like the bats of hell. Frighten the life out of anybody. And his sergeant, Tinkerbell, was almost the same. But nevertheless, he was very good. He tried very hard to dissuade me from leaving the regiment. But then I went away again. Trying to think where I went.
About how many of you volunteered, would you say?
In my own troop, six. Again, friends of mine. Darcy, who took a commission. That's him there. 1939. He took a commission and strangely, instead of going abroad, he went to Army headquarters in Mere, in Wiltshire. And this is from 1941, I think. Yes, I'm sorry for the hesitation.
It's all right.
Mine's getting a bit blank.
So six of you went where? I mean, what was your...
I'm trying to think where we went. Again, back at the garrison at Woolwich. To go overseas with a draft. And we went by train right up to Greenock. No, sorry, to Liverpool. That's right, from London to Liverpool. Place called Burton-on-Trent. We stayed two nights and we were buried in a brewery. And as I was a bombardier, I was put in charge of a big hut and a warehouse.
Were you a proper bombardier by this time, or were you still acting unpaid?
No, I was a proper bombardier then. and all the pubs in that particular area were very pro-service people. And the chaps in the big warehouse, which next door to this particular warehouse, were barrels of beer so big, you know how many gallons they have, hundreds. And the troops found their way in there, and they were filling up the fire buckets with beer, so that all they had to do was lean out of their bunk beds with their mugs and fill up with beer and roll back into bed again. And they got drunk. And we lost one chap. He tried to walk across the Trent on the bridge parapet, and he wasn't the first. Quite a number had got very drunk, tried to do that. And we lost him, drowned in the river. But, yes, that's it. Then we boarded a ship.
At Liverpool.
At Liverpool. And went up to Greenock to take on some more troops at Greenock.
Do you know the name of the ship?
I'm thinking for a simple reason, we made a song up, and I'm trying to think of the song. Y21. Because I would change the words from another song, we're sailing on the Y21, and every day when work is done, we lie out in the midday sun, sailing on the Y21. Ridiculous, but, yeah.
What were conditions like on the boat?
Very good, I thought, very good. I was asked to man the gun at the rear of the ship. It was an anti-submarine gun. And
what type?
I can't remember it. It's borne up. It didn't appear to me as though it would stop a seagull, but that's what it was supposed to do. I'm very pleased we never had to try. And I met another very dear friend of mine from the New Forest, where I spent a lot of my young years with my grandfather because of family split up. That's the hillier side. And he was the son of the laird. But we had a very, very pleasant crossing. Went into Port Said. Oh, sorry, we stopped at Cape Town with the lady in white. She became quite famous, singing on the dock as we went away.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was rather novelty. But we stayed in Cape Town a few days, went up to Queen Street, very surprised to find the Cadena Cafe, which we had in this country. The Rand was embalmed, I think. I got into trouble, got busted down to Transpondavere again because I'd gone into the Swahili area or whatever it was, which was out of bounds. But
how did you get on with the South Africans?
Very well. Very well indeed. I didn't like the way the white South African treated the black South African. That's in uniform. They wouldn't even sleep in the same barrack room. They were really miles apart. And that was long before apartheid. Then the next thing we knew, we were going up the Red Sea, I think it was, to Port Said.